We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
How few of the human race have ever had an opportunity of choosing a system of government for themselves?
They're acting like they're bigger than government.
Mark Reardon.
Pay attention to science, 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 and science.
Whoa, slow down. I'm a scientist, and that was still fast.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Hey, we got a nice Cardinals victory, another walk-off this afternoon. Sue Thomas claims to have heard the fireworks on the drive-in,
yes, which is a great feeling,
isn't it?
It's the best.
Yeah, it was a boring game. Last night was boring, too. I went to the game. I mentioned my buddies Scott Jennings and Joe Arnold were here yesterday, and they are often on the show. You know, we've talked to Joe quite a bit, former WHAS reporter down in Louisville. And Jennings used to work there, too, but he's, you know, a political guy now. He's on CNN all the time trying to keep them straight. And they had these... It was interesting because they were always planning on coming in for the game today, but there was an option for like $6 tickets last night. So
we were
in the upper deck. But have you ever been in the lower bowl of Busch Stadium when there's not a lot of people in there? And then you look up in the upper deck, and the upper deck is relatively not crowded, but there are these people that sit up way at the top.
Yeah,
and have you ever thought to yourself, why is that? Well, I found out last night why people do that.
Why? Because, shade?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting out there, I think it was section 331, so it's in the right field by the foul pole, even to the, you know, out of in foul territory, right of the foul pole, or if you're facing home plate, left of the foul pole. And it was sunny. You know, it was really sunny. It wasn't that
shade.
Hot. It was a nice night, but we took shade. We kept climbing higher and higher into the stadium to seek refuge. But
how many people were there last night, Mark? Was it, do you know?
Approximately 25,000,
okay.
I think. Although I think that's generous, really. If I had to guess, I don't think there were much more than 20,000 people in that place last night.
They said today when I was driving in, there was about between 24 and 25,000 today.
Yeah,
too.
Well, but see, that's paid, too. That is depending on who's, you know, going through the turnstiles. I think that's how they determine that. So if you had tickets and you didn't use them, and I can imagine that on a day game in particular, some people don't use those tickets. It's not a good team right now. I mean, Tom Ackerman, who was on with us yesterday, just tweeted out it's a long season. And it is a long season. I mean, there's plenty of time to potentially turn it around, but they're pretty lucky they won these two games against the Marlins simply because there was no offense again. No offense whatsoever.
And I saw people as I was driving in who left early. And of course, when they left, it was nothing. It was the score of 0-0. And of course, I'm sure they heard the fireworks as they went to the car and thought,
I felt bad last night because I left when it was tied. And then, you know, it was a walk-off. Goldschmidt, a walk-off in the ninth. But I was already home. And I did get to watch it at home. So we are off and running on this Wednesday, which might be another technologically challenged day because we have all kinds of things happening behind the scenes. I'm going to try to be optimistic and hope that we can hold things together. I have no idea if that's possible, but it's like coming in here every day wondering if things are going to work or if we're going to be on the air. It's not the most settling feeling in the world. A couple things I want to mention as we get through the afternoon. Brian Kitrick is going to be with us this afternoon. He's on PGA Radio, and we're going to talk about the U.S. Open, some of this controversy with DeChambeau and Brooks, and it's a huge tournament at Torrey Pines, and Kitrick is great. I've never interviewed him. We've only had exchanges on text and email, and I'm a fan of his show. I have to admit that I listen to satellite radio, but he does a great job on there with his partner, John McGinnis, and he's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Congresswoman Ann Wagner will be here, Josh Hammer from Newsweek, who is one of the editors over there, opinion editors, and this always surprises people. He's a conservative. Newsweek has a conservative opinion editor, and I love Charles Lipson. He is a political science professor at the University of Chicago. He's been on my show many times, and he wrote about this Ilhan Omar contempt for America situation with Hamas and the comparison to Israel. And, of course, Cori Bush is in on that as well. But let me start with some school stuff just because I think this is interesting. And I have my daughter going every day now to something called, they usually call it Discovery Club, I think, after school. It's the after-school daycare, essentially, in Rockwood. So when the school bell rings, she goes over there, and then we pick her up, you know, before the day is up. And now I think they call it, I don't know, it's something different. They came up with
Adventure
a fancy
Club,
name.
Adventure Club, I think.
But it's
what
not
you
even Adventure Club. Now it's like Adventure Link or something. They came up with a new name for it for the summer.
Adventure
because,
Synergy.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I don't want to tie this in with something that I read today that was actually in the New York Times. It was a fourth grade teacher from Washington, D.C., which made some great points. But I mentioned on Monday, as Alexa Reardon started this endeavor at age 6, and she's been wearing masks in school ever since last fall. The first 6 weeks was in my basement. Then we had two quarantine periods in my house, okay, both of which were a big waste of time. But we did it because we were told that we had to. But I pull up on Monday, and I thought I didn't see anybody wearing masks. I didn't see kids wearing masks. The teacher was, but I guess maybe they have some policy with the teacher. But I pulled up today, and there were three or four kids, and they were outside, and they were wearing masks. And I asked my daughter, I said, because we're not even bringing a mask because she doesn't have to wear one. Mm-hmm. And I said, I thought you didn't have to wear masks. And her comment was, well, you know, maybe their parents think it's safer. That was what Alexa said. I said, okay, that's fine. But what I want to tell them is, no, it's first of all, it's not. You don't have to worry about your kids outside in particular. There's nothing, I mean, less than nothing to worry about. So that's confusing to me. It's still a little confusing, the number of people that feel compelled to wear masks in some of these situations, especially outdoors. I was very encouraged last night. I didn't see anything at Busch Stadium. People were living their lives. But this is interesting, I think, because this ties in with what all these kids have had to go through in this past year, and it's a great perspective, and there's all kinds of people that are chiming in here as well. But let me read a little of the op-ed. She wrote, see here, and I think this was maybe anonymous too. Home alone with younger siblings or cousins, kids struggled to focus while bouncing a fussy toddler or getting whacked repeatedly on the head with a foam sword. I bet someone could put a really good reality show together with all of the goofy things that happen on Zoom with these kids.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, there had to be, because I watched some of them. I was on with my daughter, and I saw the kids sort of rolling over and putting their blankets over their head and playing with toys, and I saw my own daughter doing this as well. They just were being silly. These are kids. Others, she said, lay in bed and played video games or watched TV. Many times a day, I carefully repeated the instructions for a floundering student only to have them reply helplessly, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Their audio squealing and video freezing as they spoke. I'm still bewildered and horrified that our society walked away. I think this is important. Walked away from this responsibility that we called school inessential and left each family to fend for itself. Meantime, nurses, bus drivers, grocery store workers all went to work. Most of my students' parents went to work in person, not because it was safe, but because their work is essential. She says, spare me your kids are all right Facebook memes. Some children may have learned to do laundry or enjoy nature during the pandemic. Many others suffered trauma and disconnection that will take years to repair. I don't know the first thing about public health, she says. I won't venture an opinion on what impact the school closures had on controlling the spread of COVID. What I do know is that, and this is important too, and this happened here in St. Louis, which is why all this is relatable. What I do know is that the private schools in our city quickly got to work upgrading HVAC systems, putting up tents, cutting class sizes, rearranging schedules so they could reopen in relative safety. Public schools in other states and countries did the same thing. Now, obviously, she's in Washington, D.C., where they were a bit behind. We probably here, arguably in Missouri and in this area in particular, were a little bit ahead some parts of the country, although not as fast as some of us would like. Now, look, this is it's a serious issue. I think people need to look at this. There were a couple other people who chimed in here. This is a law professor, and he responded this way. I teach law school. During the pandemic, our students were given the option of attending in person or virtually. A small cadre attended classes regularly, but the vast majority opted for the virtual pajama version. I taught virtually the same materials in virtually the same way as I had in the past, with perhaps slightly more supplementary explanatory materials. When I sat down to grade the final exams, I was mortified, he said, by the level of comprehension. It was as though I frankly had failed to impart the material. That's how bad this guy said it was. Law students are pursuing postgraduate education in a highly competitive field and paying a huge tuition for the opportunity to do so. So this guy's point was, if anyone should have the incentive to fight through the virtual disadvantage, it should have been them. Yet without the discipline of the classroom, most of the students were far too casual in their reading, attention to lectures, and development of a working knowledge of the subject matter. My conclusion, classrooms matter. That's human nature. That shouldn't surprise anyone that people were struggling. I even told the story that was one of my babysitters said, and I haven't asked her this question recently, but this was last fall when all this was going on and she was doing virtual. She said she was a straight A student and was really struggling. She was getting, you know, B's and even some C's. Here's another response. The one place we could have, this is, you know, hindsight. I wish we would have thought about this a year ago. Actually, some of us encourage students and teachers and administrators, really administrators and teachers. I do remember last June, right about a year ago, because I think we were all in this situation, especially if you have kids going to school, what's going to happen? Are they going to be able to be in place? I was encouraging my district superintendent, Dr. Miles, who is outgoing now. I think he's already left the building because he decided to move on and get into another situation. But I said, look, we need to go. And I was joking about this a little bit because I called it the Mark Reardon plan, but I was serious. I mean, there was no reason in retrospect. And by the way, I think there was no reason a year ago. I said it. A lot of people, others said it. There was no reason to not have kids kindergarten through sixth grade. I would maybe even go higher, but certainly K through six in classes on a regular basis in school. The other option would be, hey, here's an idea. If you really are that worried about it, if the teachers union is worried, have the teacher at home, have the kids in the class. Well, they don't have enough staff to do something like that, right? Well, there was poor planning a year ago by these school districts because they had time. They knew what happened in March and April and May, and they had time to plan for the fall, but they didn't do it properly. So this response is the one place we could have all focused our collective energy on safety would have been schools. Many schools successfully stayed open in other states and countries. Meantime, the people who work in the supermarkets and all the other places delivered their essential services to you, and they all and their children suffered societal abandonment, the result of which will linger for a long time. A collective trust and mutual responsibility was broken. Here's another teacher from New York. It's time to put away the specter of mass teacher deaths that justified so many of us sitting home for the past year. This is a very important point. Because I remember specifically 1 year ago, this might have been July, seeing video from teachers who were protesting in Detroit. Some people scoffed at this notion, I remember, when I said it on the air and I put it on online, that the teachers were carrying signs claiming that if they had to go back to school, they were going to die. Stop killing the teachers. All this other nonsense. It was embarrassing to that profession. It didn't happen anywhere else in the world. And it wasn't going to happen here. It didn't happen in New York City. And it was fear-mongering by the union and Randy Weingarten, which continues today, and it doesn't follow the science. It doesn't follow the science at all. Here's another teacher from Chicago. As a teacher in Chicago, I struggled with online teaching in the fall. After adjusting to the new tech and new ways of teaching, I found it very convenient. No commuting, no classroom discipline, no dragging papers home. But throughout, it has been an overwhelming negative for most students. I feel guilt for reasons precisely described in this op-ed. Why were my students' parents essential enough to be exposed, but I'm too important to get COVID or laid off? I'd like to know that too, Randy Weingarten, because that was a pretty important question that she still doesn't want to answer. And yes, teachers play an important role in childcare. Deal with it, peers. I'm still dumbfounded as to how my district and union did not even attempt innovative solutions. I think with the reference to childcare there is there were teachers that were claiming that the only reason that parents like me were bitching about their kids not being in school is because we were worried about the childcare situation. Well, it's a legitimate concern that people have when they're working and trying to put food on the table. So I think that was certainly a component of it. But we were worried about our kids actually learning how to read and to write. And perhaps in a crazy fantasy world, not to get indoctrinated at your school. Let's see. Here's another response. This, 1,000 times this, responding to the op-ed. Democrats in blue states have made a terrible mistake. I'm a parent and I'm horrified to what they did to our children. I'm leaving the Democratic Party. I spent the last 15 months in utter disbelief. Other countries did not do this. Other states did not do this. Well, some of them. I mean, California did, and New Jersey did, and Michigan did, and Wisconsin did. We didn't do it here because we weren't as dumb as those other states. Parents, and the funny thing about that is we were being mocked the whole time for not following the science. Parson was being ripped. You know, Greg Abbott was being ripped. DeSantis was being ripped. I think they did pretty good in retrospect. This person said, parents are a quieter voting bloc as a whole. We are too disparate and too busy. This is a very important point here. I want to hone in on this. We don't advocate or protest in mass, but we do vote. Dems will lose the House and Senate over this in 2022. I don't know if they're going to lose the Senate next year. I'd have to look at the math, but they're going to lose the House. Anyone thinking otherwise, this person says, is not paying attention to the quiet but incredible anger boiling in most parents in blue states. That person has nailed it. And this goes beyond just what happened with remote learning. It has to do with the CRT stuff that President Obama and some of the other Democrats just want to push to the side and say it's not real. What's happening, and we saw it last year in St. Louis with the youth sports situation in particular. I saw parents who had never, never, ever gotten politically active because they have a life, because they work for a living, right? Because they don't have time to go out in the middle of the day and shut down highways. But they got active because they were sick and tired of what was being done by Sam Page and other leaders, especially when there was no good reason to do those things. And the reasons that they were citing were exposed as being fake. So parents are justifiably pissed, and they're going to keep getting pissed if schools don't figure this out. I would say we're fortunate to live in this part of the country because hopefully we're pushing forward and we're not going to have to deal with too much of this nonsense. 323, 97.1 FM Talk. I honestly don't know what to do. Okay, there it is. We're doing everything kind of differently, so I wasn't sure if the music was going to play. We'll come back here this afternoon. Plenty to get to. We got Sue's News after 4 o'clock. Newsweek opinion editor Josh Hammer at the 4 o'clock hour. Charles Lipson coming up next. We'll talk about the squad. Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush is a member, of course.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We have a Reardon Roundtable coming up on Friday. I think we'll eventually get there. This is a week that is slow for me, and maybe it's because nothing works here at the radio station. We're going through all these technical things, which, again, listeners don't care about, but it's affecting my life today. I'll tell you that, so we'll see if we can survive this. And I'm told that this is only going to last one more day. The changes here, we think it's going to be better tomorrow.
Very hopeful.
So if you hear extended music and dead air and awkward silence, and if I happen to drop an F-bomb this afternoon that gets on the air, we'll just let that pass. Hopefully I'll hit the dump button appropriately. This was a tweet by Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, member of the squad, with our own member of the squad here. We have the newest member of the squad here in St. Louis, Congresswoman Cori Bush. This tweet's not too hard to decipher. I think it's pretty obvious what she's saying here. This is the quote. "We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban." Certainly sounded like she's comparing U.S. and Israel to the Taliban and Hamas and Afghanistan, although she kind of, well, I think she might have doubled down. Did she back off those comments? She did, I guess, enough for Nancy Pelosi, because there's no retribution whatsoever. Charles Lipson is back with me this afternoon, professor emeritus of political science at the University of Chicago, and he's written about this. Charles, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
It's great to talk to you, Mark. Do you remember Bob and Ray, the comedy team, Bob and Ray?
I think I do.
You ever heard?
I think,
Well, the reason I mention them is because they had a character who would always begin with a radio glitch.
We got to pull
they
that
would
up, right?
His name was Wally Ballou, but whenever he spoke, he always began like this: "Wally Ballou here."
That was like Bob and Ray. That was like that was the old time radio shows, wasn't it?
That was that. Well, into the 50s and 60s, even to the 80s. But people who are not in radio may not know, but when you throw it to somebody in the field, the guy who's behind who's the engineer has to turn on that person's mic and turn yours off. And if he turns that one on late, it'll begin, "Lee Baloo here."
I love that.
Well, yeah, and so the difficulty for me is, again, not that people care, is that I'm the guy who runs my own board, and so it's even more confusing because I have Andrew here trying to help me out. But anyway, Charles, let's talk about people that hate America. Let's shift into that.
Something grimmer.
Yes, exactly.
The squad. The squad.
Maybe I shouldn't be stunned with what they say, and that Nancy Pelosi and leadership doesn't really seem bothered. Although some members in the party, even Debbie Wasserman Schultz, were outraged, weren't they?
Well, yeah. There were a number of Jewish members who were outraged because they thought comparing Israel to Hamas was bad. Of course, it was terrible. To me, however, what was really striking was the contempt for America that shined through all of that. They were comparing the United States to Hamas and the Taliban. Hamas bombs pizza parlors. So does the Taliban. They don't want young girls to go to school. For someone to compare the U.S., which tries to avoid civilian casualties, the Israelis not only try to avoid, the people in Hamas know it, so they use human shields. But it goes beyond these members. Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, another member of the squad, said, "Freedom of speech," I'm quoting her, "freedom of speech doesn't exist for Muslim women in Congress. The benefit of the doubt doesn't exist for Muslim women in Congress. House leadership, Democratic House leadership," meaning Nancy Pelosi, "should be ashamed of its relentless, exclusive tone policing Congresswomen of color." Now, she said she's being silenced, and she sent it out to 1.4 million Twitter followers.
Well, not only that, but then you have Cori Bush here in St. Louis, who shockingly has 900,000 followers, and then the other members of the squad. But here's the other thing that happened with Tlaib and Cori Bush is they tried to, with Ilhan Omar, try to position this as a criticism of a woman of color, right?
Right, right. Well, of course. I mean, you know, over two centuries ago, 250 years ago, Dr. Samuel Johnson in England said that patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. But I think that this overuse, this hyperbole about race is very damaging. And I want to go to President Biden. You can debate the laws in the voting laws in Georgia and in Texas. You can say that what Republicans say is trying to reduce fraud is actually restricting voting rights. And you can say that affects African Americans more. That may or may not be true. But it is not Jim Crow. Jim Crow laws had separate schools for black people, separate drinking fountains. They couldn't eat in the same restaurants. When you liken a democratically passed law that imposes some restrictions, which will either be ruled constitutional or unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court, with decades of harsh segregated treatment, you're degrading our whole language.
Charles, you had a quote in here, a couple of quotes. This surprised me because I had not seen these, from Ibram Kendi, who wrote this, that basically the position is the answer to previous racism is more racism. And we're seeing that right now with critical race theory. The only remedy to past discrimination, he said, is present discrimination. The only remedy to present discrimination is future discrimination. And he says what other people call racial microaggressions, which seemingly anything qualifies these days, I call racist abuse, and I call the zero tolerance policies preventing and punishing these abusers what they are, anti-racist. This is what we've seen here in the last couple of weeks with even Tom Hanks, that Ellie Kemper, I don't know if you followed that situation from here in St. Louis with Ellie Kemper, who was the queen of a ball when she was 19 years old, of an organization that has racist roots in the deep, deep past. But it's not good enough to apologize anymore. You have to be anti-racist. That's the new term, isn't it?
Well, it's a term that is deliberately confusing because what most of us think anti-racism is believing in racial equality. We don't believe you should be admitted to a college because of your race or excluded from a college. We don't believe you should be not able to eat in a restaurant because of your race, not able to go to a school, and so forth. That's not what the squad, that's not what Ibram Kendi, that's not what all these people call anti-racism. But I want to add one point besides their tendentious definition, and that is you should always be asking, who decides? Who decides this? Well, the speed limit on your highway, you may not like the speed limit. It's 60 miles an hour, and you think 70 should be the speed limit. But you should ask, who decides? Well, we have a legislature, and they've empowered the state highway department to set those speed limits. But in this case, it's a self-appointed group of people, and they just attack anybody who differs from them. And then they go back to the ninth grade and attack people for it. And unfortunately, they have the mass media on their side.
Oh, they do. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Which is shocking to me. But there's pushback coming every once in a while. I saw it with Jon Stewart this week on Colbert. And then I played this, Charles. I don't know if you heard Bill Maher, who is on the right side of some of these issues, like Islamic terrorism in particular. But here's what he said.
If you think America is more racist now than ever, more sexist than before women could vote, and more homophobic than when were a felony, you have progressophobia.
So he says you have progressophobia. I love that. And he's a guy on the far left criticizing the far left.
Right. Well, comedians have stopped coming to college campuses. And so oddly, although the late night comedians know they can get a quick laugh by mocking Donald Trump, you don't see very much mocking of Joe Biden's cognitive decline, do you? Or his fumbling for words. You saw a lot of that for George W. Bush. I didn't think, actually, George W. Bush was not smart. And I knew a lot of people who knew him in college. He was a couple of years ahead of me at the same university. But he has trouble with word retrieval, which is normally considered a protected class, actually. Joe Biden has something else, And you just don't see people mocking him. And I think you're beginning to see pushback. You've seen it on local school boards.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We've had it here in St. Louis for sure, in my school district.
I think that the answer to that is to let funding follow the children. If these schools want to teach something and parents want to have their children indoctrinated, fine. Let the six kids that want to go to that school fund those teachers. But let other parents just pull their children out and send them to schools that they want to.
I've got some audio that I'm going to play a little bit later. Something happened last night with Rita Moreno on Stephen Colbert's show. And not unlike the Jon Stewart situation, there seemingly was pushback from Colbert. Not seemingly, there was. And the reason is, well, he's got this woke audience, and he has succeeded. And I mentioned this yesterday. He was floundering in the ratings when the show first started, and then he sort of tapped into the anti-Trump sentiment. Good for him. He took off with it. But why are people like Stephen Colbert and even Nancy Pelosi so afraid of that side of the political spectrum? I guess maybe you can make the case that Republicans are in a similar way with the far right, but what's your answer there, Charles?
Organized activists are the short answer. Look at how teachers' unions, there are a lot more parents than there are members of the teachers' union, but teachers' union is well organized, and especially in black communities, they are a stable middle-class force in the communities, and elected officials really depend on them. I've talked to a lot of black elected officials, and this is true, and it's hard to get diffuse people organized. You can get a coherent group organized, and that's the case.
Yeah.
You just see it on both the left and the right. But I think more is coming. I think that what's really bad here is that some people want to divide our country by race and class and religion and pit everyone against each other. That's horrible.
I think it's horrible, too, and I think there's a big undercurrent that might very well be misinterpreted by the folks on the left when it comes to these cultural issues. I think a lot of people who voted last fall were maybe exhausted by President Trump, even though they agreed with him on many issues. But that doesn't mean they're going to vote that way in 2022 or 2024, and I think people and parents in particular with these school board issues, they're angry right now.
They sure are, and they don't have many choices. What are they supposed to do, sell their house and move?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's why they have to fight back, and they're getting organized in ways that I think are pretty impressive, really. Because
very similar to the Tea Party, actually,
it
bottom-up
stuff. Right. It is
very,
absolutely.
Very
now, one more thing before I let you go, because I'm going to get to this afternoon, too. Have you heard the latest from your mayor there, Lori Lightfoot, on violence and gun violence?
She doesn't like it.
Well, she doesn't like it. It's just the guns. It's the illegal guns that are causing everything in her city. Not the criminals. Right. Not the criminals up there, Charles. Just remember, it's the guns that are shooting people themselves.
Yeah. And, of course, what's happened is that when you see a breakdown in law and order, people arm themselves because they no longer expect the police to protect them. But we just don't have... I don't know if you saw that video in San Francisco of somebody riding a bicycle.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday. So this guy rides into a Walgreens on a bike, and he just starts filling up a big duffel bag. Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah.
Nobody stopped.
Well, I didn't blame the bicycle.
That's a great point. That is an outstanding point. That's why you're the guest, Charles Lipson. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. Always great to have you on from the University of Chicago. We'll get you back soon. Thank you, Charles.
Bye-bye.
Take care. 343, 97.1 FM Talk.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
That Rita Moreno audio because I think this is interesting for a couple of different reasons. Because you'll hear Colbert sort of push back here. We played the Jon Stewart audio yesterday, and I do think it's a situation where Colbert has his woke crowd and he doesn't want to offend them. But there's a documentary. I'm very disappointed that I haven't seen this yet, and I would love to get Rita Moreno on the show. I sat next to her. I can't remember. I think I told you this.
Tell
I don't
me
know
this.
If I said it on the air. I sat next to her at an award show.
Name drop.
Yeah, right. So you need that sounder.
I do.
And I wasn't next to her, but she was right about as far as I am from you right now at the other table. And she was so funny because when all the other awards, this was at the Critics' Choice Awards maybe 3 years ago, when somebody else won an award and she didn't agree with it, she wasn't trying to be quiet. She would crack something. And then
Dang.
When she lost, I think the reason she was there is she was nominated in a TV category for, anybody know, I think she has a reality show, right? So she's nominated. And then she doesn't win, and she let loose when she didn't win. It was very, very funny. So, you know, I think those of us who have watched television for decades and are familiar with her, we know she can be a little sassy. But here's what happened last night. A little background here. So Lin-Manuel Miranda, who arguably has done more for I got to be careful here. Do I have to call them Latinx like the LA Times?
Yeah.
But Latinos in this country. So he's got a movie out called In the Heights right now, which was, I believe, also based on a play.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's,
no, it was
his
film
version. It's his first musical that
play, right?
He wrote before Hamilton.
He did
right.
that, yeah.
So
before Hamilton.
There's, and I've seen a little bit of this, and I've seen some coverage, for example, in the LA Times, because I read that every day, that the skin tone of those Latino members in the Heights was not dark enough. Do I got that right, Andrew?
Yeah.
Basically, that's the allegation. All right, here it is.
Can we talk for a second about that criticism about Lin-Manuel? That really upsets me.
Oh yeah, for
Did
the people who don't
that?
For the people who don't know, your friend and ours, Lin-Manuel Miranda, has been
he's
in the
also,
news.
He also co-produced my
documentary.
Yeah.
There's been some criticism for the lack of Afro-Latino people in the Heights, the movie adaptation of his play.
I mean, it's like
what do you make of that?
You can never do right, it seems. This is the man who literally has brought Latino-ness and Puerto Rican-ness to America. I couldn't do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I mean, I would love to say I did, but I couldn't.
Good point.
Lin-Manuel has done that really single-handedly, and I'm thrilled to pieces, and I'm proud that he produced my documentary.
And so are you saying that while you may understand where people's concerns come from, that perhaps it's misplaced in criticizing him in this?
Well, I'm simply saying, can't you just wait a while and leave it alone?
Right.
Thank you.
How about shut the F up? And Colbert doesn't even get it. So the only way that you can stop some of the insanity that's happening in this country right now is if people in those media roles finally speak up. Like Jon Stewart.
Yes, yes.
Like Bill Maher. Now, Colbert is completely unwilling to do it. He ain't going to do it.
No. Nope.
Now, from a business perspective, I understand that because he has ratings and he has good ratings, you know, at least lately. So if he offends the woke crowd, they're going to go away. But it is up to, I think, because people on the right, we know how crazy this stuff is. And we've been trying to do something about it and shout it down for a long time. But the only way, let's think about COVID in the last couple of months. The only way some of this stuff really started moving in a positive direction, many of us had been saying for a long time, hey, you don't need to wear masks outside. Hey, how about take the face mask off the kids because it's harming them more than it's helping them. Hey, and then finally, after Rochelle Walensky claims that Greg Abbott is going to kill everyone in Texas, and after Fauci makes all these, you know, scare tactic claims in March, in the beginning of April, finally, when you had a little pushback from Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show and a couple other people who were parents who were sick and tired of being in these same situations, and they were following the science and they knew what the science. That's the other thing about this is it's the exact opposite, at least on the COVID front, as the science. And why someone can't forcefully, why is it Rita Moreno is the only one that's speaking up forcefully for Lin-Manuel Miranda? You know, Barack Obama should speak up forcefully for Lin-Manuel Miranda. They're friends, right? He should be the guy that comes out and says, wait a second, you guys are out of your minds if you don't understand the role that this guy has played in, you know, moving that culture forward. But she's right. It's never going to be good enough. If you're someone who thinks you're not racist, it doesn't matter. If you're not anti-racist, you have to be anti-racist like Ellie Kemper and Tom Hanks. So they're not going to let you off the hook if you don't, you know, I guess, get active. I don't even know what people are asking
for. They don't want to let anybody off the hook. That's not
the point. See, I still think that these are the people that are in the far, far minority. And
but they're
Stephen
loud.
Colbert and others, they are loud. And
yeah.
we let them sort of roll over and roll over people and just get their way. Someone's got to put a stop to it, because the craziness on Twitter, when you see comments that people are weighing in on, I have a good one after the top of the hour. I don't have time for this. I'll kind of pick up on this here in just a second. We'll get into Sue's news, but I have an example from something I actually read today, and this is COVID-related. So we'll get to that coming up after 4, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.